Welcome to the History Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Thomason. The History Podcast is an educational podcast intended to engage student and lifelong learning in American history. Without further delay, let's get to it. Welcome to the podcast. It is quite possible that no country in the history of the world has had to address more issues related to racism than our own. No one is born a racist. It's not genetic, and you don't catch it like the common cold. So how is it that our country has dealt so much with the problems of racism? While this answer is far too complicated and complex for the sake of this podcast, it may be best for us to look first at the origins of the slave trade in the colonies. Colonizing the New World ushered in fundamental changes in the political, social, economic, and cultural makeup of the Americas. Much of these changes had consequences that crossed oceans to impact the lives and livelihoods of people worldwide. This is no more directly seen than in the enslavement of human beings in Africa. It's important to note, though, that slavery has been an institution for centuries. The Egyptians enslaved Israelites. The Athenians had slavery, as did the Romans, the Assyrians, the Muslim world in the Middle Ages, as did the early states in China and India. Just as in Europe and Asia, slavery also existed in Africa, which we will discuss further in the episode. However, there is something very different and unique about the Atlantic slave trade, especially in the American colonies. The form of slavery used in the American colonies was a form we call chattel slavery, which is where slaves are viewed as property to be bought, sold, and branded like cattle. Confronting histories like ours can be very difficult. Confronting histories like ours can be very humbling. Gut-wrenching and challenging. But facing these issues directly can heal. They can restore. And they can reconcile. On today's podcast, we are going to take a look at the origins of the African slave trade, known as the Atlantic slave trade, in this country, and how this benefited the colonists in Jamestown and the other upstart settlements. Thanks for joining us. When the first successful colony is established at Jamestown, there's a lot of pressure that's going to arise for the enslavement of African Americans. The colonists at Jamestown were desperate for labor and for food. It's a level of desperation that most of us, thankfully, will never encounter in our lives. The worst season for the colonists was the winter of 1609 into 1610, where food was so scarce that they began to roam the woods for berries and nuts, and in some cases turned to cannibalism, even digging up bodies of dead people. Colonists were dying left and right, and there seemed to be no end in sight. In fact, it's reported in the journals of the House of Burgesses of Virginia that the first settlement had 100 persons who had, and I quote, one small ladle of barley per meal. When more people arrived, there was even less food. It goes on to add, and I quote, that they were driven through insufferable hunger to eat those things which nature most abhorred, the flesh and excrements of man, as well as our own nation. They digged up some of his grave after he had lain buried 3 days and wholly devoured him. Others, envying the better state of body of any whom hunger has not yet so much wasted as their own, they lay wait and threaten to kill and eat them. End quote. Many of the colonists blamed the 12-year governorship of Sir Thomas Smith, stating that he was withholding rations and leaving colonists to starve. The Virginians needed labor in order to grow more crops to live off and to export. Now, tobacco at this time is really starting to take off by 1617, when they begin to send off cargoes full of it to England. But in order to increase the amount of crops you have, you need to increase your workforce, and there aren't enough colonists to get that done. So who can you add to your workforce? Well, they couldn't add the natives like Columbus had done because they were outnumbered. And even though most of the colonists had more advanced weaponry that led to the massacre of many of the native groups, the natives were resilient. They were tough. They understood the lay of the land. They were extremely resourceful and ultimately unafraid of the white settlers. So the natives are not an option. White servants, also known as indentured servants, had not really been brought in large numbers to this point in time. Many of them had their way paid over, and as a way to pay that debt off, they would work the land for their investors. But many of them died because of disease. They weren't used to these conditions, and those that did survive did not have the work ethic needed to meet the demands. Additionally, indentured servants were only in your service for a few short years, usually just 6 years. That is, if they didn't die first. And as for the free white settlers, many of them came from an environment back in England where they had a lot more leisure time and weren't used to these types of demands. In fact, in the early years of the Jamestown settlement, John Smith, at one point, had to put them in work gangs to force them into the fields for their own survival. African slaves, in the eyes of white settlers, were the answer. And they were certainly not the first to trade for African slave labor. By 1619, millions of Africans had already been brought from Africa to South America and the Caribbean to work in the Spanish and the Portuguese colonies as slaves. I mean, you could even go back a half century before Columbus, and the Portuguese had taken 10 Africans to Lisbon, which is what starts the trade of slaves. So naturally, it would have been out of character for this time period for the 20 Africans that arrive at Jamestown and sold as property to be used exclusively for labor to be considered anything other than a slave to the Jamestown colonists. The defenseless nature of the Africans made the transition into enslavement easier. They were stripped of their culture, their heritage, their language, their dress, their way of life, their family traditions, and only through incredible determination were African slaves able to preserve any of that. Now, a question that we need to ask, and I hear this often talked about, and I think it needs to be asked, Was African culture inferior to European culture? And the answer is by no means. Certainly, they were inferior in military capabilities. They were vulnerable to whites with guns and ships, but not in any other facet. In fact, their cultures were very different, but not inferior. Even when Westerners tried to secure military control of the African coast, they couldn't do it. They were unable to take the interior and had to come to terms with the chiefs there. The African civilization was as advanced in its own way as that of Europe. In many respects, you could argue that it was more admirable. However, and this is important, it also included its own cruelties, its own hierarchical privilege, and an appetite for human sacrifice for religion or profit. Africa had a population of about 100 million people skilled in iron implements and farming, with large, large urban centers with incredible achievements in things like ceramics and weaving and sculpting. So impressive, in fact, that Europeans in the 16th century raved about how structured and stable and organized these kingdoms, kingdoms like Timbuktu and Mali were. Africa used a system of feudalism, just like Europe, and it was built around agriculture with hierarchies of lords and vassals. But the major difference, and I want you to understand that this is the major difference between Africa and Europe in terms of their slave societies. The difference is Africa did not come out of slave societies of Greece and Rome, which had put an end to communal living. Slavery did exist in the African states, as we mentioned, and it sometimes is going to be used by Westerners as justification for their own slavery. But the slaves of Africa were more like the serfs of Europe, which was most of Europe's population, quite frankly, at the time. It definitely was harsh servitude. I don't want to undersell that. But African slaves had rights, which slaves brought to America did not. In fact, in the Ashanti Kingdom of West Africa, slaves were allowed to marry. They could own property. They could swear an oath. They could be a competent witness, and eventually could become the heir to their master. They could even be adopted into their master's family. That does not sound like slavery in the Western world. This is not to say that African slavery was good. It was not by any stretch. But it was different from Europeans and slavery in the North American colonies. We see two very different styles of slavery when we juxtapose Africa with Europe and North America. And the factors that differentiated African slavery from American slavery most was, number one, the ability for limitless profit that comes from capitalistic agriculture. And two, reducing the slave to less than human by use of racial hatred, hierarchies that are established where the white was master and the African was slave. I personally think it's also important to note that because they came from settled culture, built on community with tribal customs and family ties, Africans found themselves helpless when removed from that. They were usually kidnapped or captured from the interior of Africa, frequently by other Black Africans, caught up in the slave trade themselves, sold into slavery on the coast of Africa, then crammed into pens with other African blacks, often speaking different languages. And the conditions of capture and sell were absolutely horrendous. Sometimes marching for thousands of miles, shackled to others, under the threat of whip and gun. I mean, these were death marches. They were death marches in which 2 out of every 5 black Africans died. Once they arrived at the coast, they were detained in cages until they were sold. Once they were sold, they were crammed onto slave ships in spaces that are scary small. Spaces that are not bigger or much bigger than a coffin. Chained together in the dark. You've got the wet slime of the ship's bottom and the suffocating stench of human excrement. In fact, we have documents from this period that describe the conditions, and I quote, "The height, sometimes between decks, was only 18 inches, so that the unfortunate human beings could not turn around or even on their sides. The elevation being less than the breadth of their shoulders. And here they are usually chained to the decks by the neck and legs." Under these conditions, it is believed that 1 out of every 3 survived the journey on the open sea. First the Dutch, then the English dominated the slave trade. Some Americans in New England entered the business, and in 1637, the first American slave ship, the Desire, sailed from Marblehead. In fact, by 1800, 10 to 15 million black Africans had been transported as slaves to the Americas. It is estimated that Africa lost close to 50 million human beings due to death and slavery during those centuries where Western civilization really began to take off at the hands of slave traders and plantation owners in Western Europe and in America. Ironically, the countries credited as being the most advanced in the world. To suggest that participation in the slave trade was limited to the pagan world, that somehow the religious were immune or above the frenzy for profit that came from slavery is a complete misrepresentation of this period or any period of slavery in this country. In the year 1610, a Catholic priest in the Americas named Father Sandoval wrote a letter to a church functionary in Europe, and he wanted to know if the capture, transport, and enslavement of black Africans was legal by church doctrine. He received a response dated March 12, 1610 from Brother Louis Brannan with this answer, and I quote, "Your Reverence writes me that you would like to know whether the Negroes who are sent to your parts have been legally captured. To this I reply that I think your Reverence should have no scruples on this point, because this is a matter which has been questioned by the Board of Conscience in Lisbon, and all its members are learned and conscientious men. Nor did the bishops who were at Sao Tome, Cape Verde, or Loando, all learned and virtuous men, find fault with it. We have been ourselves here for 40 years, and there have been among us very learned fathers. Never did they consider the trade illicit. Therefore, we and the fathers of Brazil buy these slaves for our service without scruple." The desperation of Jamestown settlers for labor and their inability to use natives, the difficulty of getting white indentured servants to work, and the availability of the African slave led to profit-seeking settlers further advancing slavery in the colonies. Although slavery was not legalized yet in those early years, Black Africans were listed separately on the list of servants in the colony. Now, slavery will become more and more and more pervasive in the Americas as the plantation systems continue to grow. White indentured servants could not, from a numerical standpoint, meet the growing demands of the plantation system. But the slave trade could. And by 1700 in Virginia, there were 6,000 slaves, which is about a 12th of the population. But by the time we get to 1761, there were 170,000 slaves in Virginia colony, which is about half the population. And I think it's really important to note here, the three crops that African slaves were tortured and worked to the bone to produce were three crops that were not needed for survival: tobacco, coffee, and sugar. Now, I'm going to leave that for you to kind of wrestle with. You can draw your own conclusions. I have mine. You can draw yours. But those three crops, the three crops that they were, when they were brought to the colonies, that they were forced to harvest season after season under tough, impossible conditions, were three crops that were not needed for survival. I think that's something we need to meditate on as a people. You see, the system of slavery was not just physical, it was also psychological. The slaves were taught discipline, were impressed again and again of their inferiority, to know their place, to see blackness as a sign of subordination, and to treat their master with honor. This was accomplished with hard labor, the breakup of slave families, the creation of disunity among slaves by categorizing some as field slaves and some as house slaves, and finally, the power of the law and the immediate power of the overseer or master to establish his power by whipping, burning, mutilation, and death. And over the next several decades leading up to 1776, we will see slave revolts in response to the psychological warfare and the physical mistreatments of their slave owners, which is a topic we will discuss in a future podcast. But for now, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the History Podcast. We would like your feedback, good or bad, so that we can better serve our audience. If you have a question you would like for us to answer in a future podcast or have a topic request, leave that as well. If you haven't already subscribed to the History Podcast, go ahead and do that now so that you'll get notified when new episodes come out. You can find the History Podcast on any of your podcast streaming platforms. The History Podcast is an Anchor FM production.